Throughout the 1980s, a strange phenomenon was sweeping North America.
They were in a panic. And like people in a panic, they want solutions.
Allegations of underground satanic cults, torturing and terrorizing children. The thing is, there were no satanic cults preying on children. And nearly 30 years later, the people touched by it all are still picking up the pieces.
This isn't a work of fiction. This is a work of history.
Satanic Panic, available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey there, I'm Rosemary Barton.
And I'm Elamine Abdul-Mahmoud.
And this is Party Lines.
And Rosie, we have talked a lot about vaccines over the past few weeks. You know, the procurement, the getting approved, the getting delivered. But there is a trickier conversation that people are starting to have right now. And that has to do with the concerns and questions that people who are close to you, people in your family, might have about getting the vaccine. I want to dig into some of that and how to navigate it, especially with this new updated guidance on the AstraZeneca vaccine here in Canada this week.
Good one. Also this week, members of the Conservative Party are meeting virtually for their convention. And I would say there's a little pressure on the Conservative leader, Erin O'Toole. He's been the leader for 7 months. And morale is a bit low amongst MPs, poll numbers also low. So where does the party go from here?
Lots to get into. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay, before we get into this, Rosie, I just want to tell you a quick story about my mom, okay? Are you ready
for
this?
I love a story about your mom.
Me too. I'm a big fan. Big fan. Okay, so maybe, I don't know, it was like maybe 2 months ago, my mom sent me this WhatsApp message. She forwarded to me and she said, you know, can you look into this? And it was basically like, that's what my mom does, by the way, sometimes. She'll just send me something.
Just assigns you. Yeah.
Is this real? Can you investigate? And the thing is, in this particular case, it was basically a message that she got from a friend who got it from a friend who said, here's a bunch of reasons why you shouldn't take a vaccine. It was a video, a bunch of people who claimed to be doctors who said, the vaccine is not safe and you shouldn't take it. Basically just a bunch of misinformation. So I called her back right away and I was like, we got to talk about this. Let's talk about it because it is not real. Who sent this to you? Mm-hmm. I don't know where they got it from, etc. I felt satisfied that we resolved it that night in terms of just like nipping this sort of misinformation in the bud. Until like 2 weeks later, she sent me another message and the same process started all over again, which is, you know, it was annoying, but also I realized two things. One, I'm in a personal fight with WhatsApp misinformation, like, good Lord. And two, I think it's true that there is an overwhelming amount of vaccine information and a lot of it changes so quickly. Mm-hmm. And that actually opens up a space for misinformation to grow. And I think generally, like, the amount of information, the overwhelm, is not good for people who are trying to just keep up with the news. And it might end up contributing to vaccine hesitancy. And I bring this up because this week we got some significant news about the AstraZeneca vaccine. This is a vaccine that Health Canada greenlit way back at the end of February. And originally, the National Advisory Committee on Immunization recommended the shot be used in adults under 65. But this week, they've now updated that guidance. They said they have enough data to recommend it to adults over 65. They can get that too. But it's also coming in this context of a bunch of big European countries, Germany, France, Italy, they've temporarily paused the rollout of the AstraZeneca vaccine because they say there's been reports of it being connected to blood clots. And the counter to that is that the European Medicines Agency says there is no indication that the vaccine has caused these blood clots. The WHO has joined them in saying there is no proven link. Health Canada said there's no indication there's a problem with this vaccine right now. And it's just like, where do you begin to process how much information there is? And when does it become, you know, too much for people?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully your mom has you, but I'm not sure you're going to be able to do that for every mom or dad out there.
Yes, exactly.
We can put your number out and see how it goes.
Yeah, please text me. Text me your parents' WhatsApp.
Text me your vaccine questions. I get them too, I must say. I get them from friends and family members who are consuming media, but perhaps not the same way that you and I are. I mean, I think there's a couple things going on, right? The science, we are watching science in a way that we haven't before. We are aware of organizations in a way we weren't before. Do you think that I knew that NASI existed before the pandemic? Yeah. No, I did not. I did not know we had a National Advisory Committee on Immunization, but we do. I'm glad to hear it. I don't think we understood how Health Canada has sort of a regulatory body inside of it that approves the use of vaccines and determines the safest way to use them. I don't know that we knew that. I don't know that we knew that all of that advice is given to provincial authorities. And because it's a shared jurisdiction, then provinces can go away and make their own decision. For instance, Quebec, even though NASI said you can use this in adults under 65, Quebec right out of the gate said, no, we're going to go ahead and use it for everybody because we want to have as much coverage as possible. So, yeah. I there's a lot of information. There's a lot of things that we weren't thinking about before, a lot of groups that we weren't thinking about before. And that, I think, makes it sometimes confusing and frustrating and worrying for people. There's a doctor by the name of Christopher Labos who spoke to our colleague Sohanna Marchand on CBC News Network Tuesday morning about these updated recommendations from NASI. He's a cardiologist with a master's degree in epidemiology, and he calls himself a medical debunker. And this is what he had to say about sort of all of this information coming at us.
What they've done is what a lot of expert committees do. They issue guidelines and then they revise them as new data comes out. I think we have to be more cognizant of the fact that the way people consume news these days is they look for these answers. And once you issue a headline, you know, vaccine not recommended people over the age of 65, it's very hard to put that genie back in the bottle. So I don't think anyone did anything wrong, but I think we have to realize that when our goal is to communicate science to the public, when our goal is to try to address vaccine hesitancy, which is a huge problem, not just for COVID, but for all vaccines. So when we have to address that, I think we do have to be careful about the way we say things and not give the public mixed messages, because it does. It confuses them, makes them hesitant, and you see people being hesitant about the AstraZeneca vaccine when in reality there doesn't seem to be any real reason why they should.
So I'll just point out, first of all, that it's very early in the vaccine rollout. We actually don't have an overwhelming amount of data around vaccine hesitancy, and we certainly don't have it specifically in relation to AstraZeneca. But sort of anecdotally, what we're talking about is that because of the changing information, there are people who are asking questions in a way that they, you know, maybe wouldn't have done about another vaccine.
I think that's exactly right. And it's also coming in a larger context. I mean, like, when I reference my mom, I'm actually talking about, I think, a broader story there, too, which is there's been some coverage of how racialized Canadians have, A, they've had the highest rates of COVID-19 in the country, and they've also had a pretty lengthy, tough relationship with the healthcare system, let's say. Our colleagues Jorita Sengupta and Janela Massa reported on how the history of anti-Black racism and racism in the healthcare system has caused a lot of people to be a little bit skeptical when it comes to what the healthcare system is trying to tell them. So this is a problem that we're trying to solve now. And it is worth mentioning that there were a lot of worries in the earlier stages about whether Indigenous people who have also had a difficult relationship with Canada's healthcare system, if there would be a higher rate of vaccine hesitancy there. But so far, that hasn't borne out to be true. But these are issues that we kind of have to get in front of now to address and have to kind of name them. And as the doctor was pointing out, when the headlines change, it does feel like, okay, this is new information and people have to adjust to it. And that puts us in a difficult position. By us, I mean people in the media, of having to sort of regularly stay on top of what is the latest piece of information that we need to communicate as clearly as possible. And I am anxious about how this is going. I'm anxious about people like my mom who are listening to all these pieces of information coming at them and not knowing how to determine which is real and which is not.
So let's just put a couple more facts on the table to help people then. The first fact that you hear from Dr. Tam, every public health official in every province, indeed even the Prime Minister, is the good vaccine is the one that's offered for you. Take the first vaccine that's offered to you, because every vaccine protects you from hospitalization and death. That is a widely held piece of advice across the country that includes AstraZeneca. Let's take another bit of information that is important for people. As you said, those countries in the European Union who have decided to, as a precaution, halt the use of AstraZeneca. There's other facts there that are pretty important, too. Of the approximately 5 million European residents who have gotten the AstraZeneca shot, 30 have experienced issues around blood clotting. 30. And as you said off the top there, there's no known causal link between the vaccine and the blood clotting. AstraZeneca itself says they've looked at data of more than 17 million people vaccinated in the EU and the UK. And there as well, it's, you know, 30 odd people who have experienced clotting. And they, too, have seen no causal link between the vaccine and that outcome. Health Canada, as you point out, has said the same thing. So those are all like pretty important pieces of information to take when you're thinking about, okay, it's my turn to get a vaccine and here's what's on offer to me. But the reality is that the vaccine is going to protect you. Health Canada says it only approves vaccines that are safe and effective. Mm-hmm. And so if they've approved this vaccine, as they have Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, it's because they believe that they have enough scientific data to show that it is safe and that it will keep you safe.
Hey, my name's Jamie Poisson, and I'm the host of Front Burner. It's the CBC's daily news podcast. And every day, we're discussing the big events and fault lines shaping Canada and the world. Politics, economics, social movements, you name it. Sometimes we even talk about really fun stuff, like the enduring relevance of Lord of the Rings. You can hear Front Burner on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
So a friend of mine, and I won't say her name, but she does listen, so she'll know who I'm talking about. A friend of mine who I am a friend with and work with told me the other day that her mom wouldn't have been able to recognize Erin O'Toole. Like if there was a poster of a bunch of guys, she wouldn't be able to pick them. And that's a problem, I would say, for the leader yes. of the Conservative Party now, you know, more than 200 days into the job. And as he gets ready for the Conservatives' policy convention, which kicks off on Thursday, the day this podcast drops, he is at that convention going to give a keynote speech on Friday, which is going to be really important. And he'll do a question and answer. Obviously, it's all virtual and that, you know, complicates things in a different way. But that's why we're talking about Erin O'Toole today, is because that convention is coming up and because my friend's mom doesn't really know who he is still. And in fact, you could argue that perhaps the Conservative Party is aware of this because just a few weeks ago, they launched this campaign.
Do you know who this is? Probably not. He's no celebrity. Just an ordinary Canadian who served his country.
Just a husband. Well, that's a lovely ad and introduction to Erin O'Toole.
Yes.
I fortunately do know who Erin O'Toole is. I've covered him for some time now. And, you know, I know his family. I know his background. I know, you know, who he represents, I think. But there are lots of things that I'm not sure I do know. And I think that is part of what the Conservative Party has to sort out this weekend. They need to, well, Erin O'Toole needs to tell his caucus and his party members what he stands for very clearly. And he also needs to use sort of the media's focus on the Conservative convention as an opportunity to try and explain to Canadians what he stands for. Our friend Eric Grenier, poll tracker aggregator extraordinaire, points out that the party has gained no ground over the past more than 200 days since O'Toole became leader, and that O'Toole's personal ratings are off to a worse start than Andrew Scheer's were in 2017. So what do you make of them apples?
I mean, this is a rough time.
It's rough.
Honestly, when I saw that ad, my initial instinct was, this isn't for the rest of Canada. This is for inside the party. Mm. And the reason I had that reaction is because, yes, it's true that he doesn't have that name recognition across the country, but also he's been on the job for 7 months. If this ad is to, you know, allay any restlessness, it is the restlessness that's coming from inside the house, in a sense.
That's right.
Because Erin O'Toole campaigned on this, you know, identity of being a true blue conservative. And since becoming the leader about 7 months ago, he's come under a lot of criticism from inside his own caucus in a way that is, I guess, kind of similar to the criticism that Andrew Scheer got before him. But the problem is, it is very early on in his tenure for him to be facing this kind of internal sort of backlash. And putting out that ad is a way to say, you know what? This is the image we're going with. We're going to counter this Trudeau celebrity image. It is a way for him to, I guess, remind people of the thing that got him, you know, elected as leader of the party to begin with. But having said that, he has a lot of work to do during this convention. And the fact that it is a virtual convention is not going to help him, because every time that I talk to people who love being on the inside of any political party, they say that the joy of a convention is that you get to take the temperature of everyone. You know, the joy is that you get to see the response that a leader gets after they deliver their speech. Are people clapping wildly? we won't know that, because everyone's going to be in their living room watching this convention, I guess maybe clapping on their couch, but probably not. So Erin O'Toole has a lot of work to do during this convention. And also he has to do what Andrew Scheer failed to do, which is kind of hold all these different opposing factions of the party together and actually come out united in order to present, in order to use that spotlight you talked about to, you know, make the party appear like as though it is united behind him. Because right now, that is not the story we're hearing.
Yeah. I will not miss the thundersticks at this convention. I don't like thundersticks at any convention.
I am pro thundersticks, but I take your point.
Okay. You know, to be fair to Mr. O'Toole, there are a few things that have been complicated his start, right? I don't think he expected a pandemic to take over the beginning of his leadership. And
you and me both, pal.
That's right.
You and me both.
That's right. Yes. And it is difficult, and I think O'Toole and the Conservative Party has admitted as much. It is difficult for someone to make a new impression when the entire country is relying on government to keep them going, support them, prop them up, and keep them safe and alive. So it for the first part of the pandemic, very difficult for the Conservative Party to find its footing in terms of how it could criticize the government without upsetting Canadians. We're now sort of in a different sphere of the pandemic. And for a period of time, the Conservatives, you know, were hoping to get some traction criticizing the government on vaccine rollout. That now seems to have been corrected. So you don't hear the Conservatives talking about vaccine rollout so much. Now they are trying to talk about jobs and how after this is over, we're going to need to get everybody back to work. But they don't really flesh out what that looks like. It's also difficult for a Conservative Party that is, you know, obviously fiscally conservative and normally would care about the budget being back in balance. Hard to plan what that's going to look like when the country is still in such dire straits economically. And this government is talking about billions of dollars in stimulus in the next budget. So you can see how he's sort of trapped on a couple of issues that are not of his own making. But you talked about one issue, I think, that is of his own making. And that is the way he portrayed himself during the leadership campaign. As you said, like a true blue conservative. Well, he's been faced now with a couple of issues that he has had to manage, namely Derek Sloan, someone who was a leadership candidate up against him, who is, you know, very socially conservative. And Erin O'Toole was sort of the force, if you will, behind the Conservative caucus's decision to vote to get rid of Derek Sloan after he had accepted a donation from a white nationalist. That didn't go over well with lots of other conservatives, not because they agreed with Derek Sloan, but because they didn't like that someone could just be kicked out of caucus. the abortion issue continues to be an issue for the Conservative Party. It's not going to be one of the policy issues that will be debated this weekend, but there are social conservatives that are still trying to make that an issue. So you can see how there's things there that he has done to upset, as you say, parts of the party, and maybe not given enough or found any room for compromise as previous leaders like Stephen Harper have. So, you know, I can understand how his job is difficult right now, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. Well, I think I always forget how new the Conservative Party is. I mean, in this iteration, it was founded 2003.
That's right.
So far, we have evidence that the only leader who has managed to successfully pull together all of these disparate parts has been Stephen Harper. Andrew Scheer did not do so to the same degree that Harper did. Aaron O'Toole is trying to do it from the other perspective of trying to say, okay, we're going to be a party that appeals to a sort of moderate urban kind of voter, because that is a growth area for the Conservatives.
Right.
They have a lot of votes to get in that place. But in doing so, it is upsetting other factions of the party who, you know, maybe they will leave. Like they have no reason to stay around if they don't feel listened to. And the question really becomes, you know, what can he do to do the same thing that Harper did? Well, Harper did it through explaining what the Conservative policies were going to be. You know, Harper always kind of led with, here's my policy, here's the thing that I will lead the party on. So far, we're not really hearing any kind of policy-forward approaches from Aaron O'Toole the same way that we did from Harper. The sort of fiscal responsibility note is a difficult one to hit in the middle of a pandemic. I think it's a difficult one to hit anyway, because I do think, maybe anecdotally, but I do think the attitudes about deficits and debts are changing. But particularly in the middle of a pandemic, it's kind of a hard note to say, you know, maybe you shouldn't be spending so much because, well, we are in a pandemic. And that stimulus plan that the Liberals have talked about, you know, like they have not dipped in the polls after talking about their plans to spend hundreds of billions of dollars. The one note that maybe Aaron O'Toole's hit kind of successfully has been China. And he's talked about China since before his election as leader and after that, and he's repeated the criticisms that he's had of the Liberal Party and the government and their approach to China. And that is an important issue. We continue to struggle to deal with China in this country. I'm just not sure that it's one that you can win an election on. So he's going to go into this convention and he's going to have to say some of the things that the Conservative Party is going to be about, because right now, I'm not sure the party itself knows.
One last point on this, although that was a good point to end on. One last point, and that is simply that he's not going anywhere. There may be grumbling, there may be concern, but he will be the leader into the next election. But, and this is an important point, if you lose an election with the Conservative Party, you are forced to have a leadership review in the next convention. So you've got one shot at this, really. And that's probably something that Aaron O'Toole is going to think a lot about this weekend. In the normal life, the old life, that would have been hospitality suites, they're called, at conventions, where people like have little shindigs and little rooms, and none of that will be happening at the Conservative Party convention. Maybe you'll do it virtually in your living room if you're watching. It is also
how exciting.
Is it? It's also the sound of last call. Last week, and this one, we got so many good answers that Lemmy will tell us about. But last week, we talked about how things changed so quickly a year ago, and we asked what stands out as you look back on the 12 months of this pandemic.
So after I talked about, you know, looking back at that last photo that I took with my phone, a bunch of people sent in their last photos. And one person, and she shared a picture that she took last year of a post-it note she saw on a TTC trip on the subway in Toronto. And little did she know it would be her last trip on the TTC for months. And the post-it said, which is like such a nice post-it to find, the post-it said, your self-worth is determined by you. You don't have to depend on someone telling you who you are. And then that was the last time she was on the subway, which is terrible. another person sent in a photo of their last meal before the pandemic, a really good pizza that looked incredible. And someone shared a picture of going rock climbing, the very last thing she did before the shutdown happened. And lastly, someone sent in a photo of her son all dressed up for a formal party, and the last thing he got to do before the shutdown, but he looked really cute in the suit. So isn't that nice?
I also, your photo was good. It made me really, really hungry. So maybe one day you can take me there when I ever come to Toronto again.
Yes, please.
Okay. This week we want to know, in light of our first conversation, are you having tough conversations with friends and family about the COVID-19 vaccine? Is your mom, like Elamine's mom, WhatsApping you or texting you questions so that she can understand things? Let us know if that's happening to you. You can tweet us. I'm at Rosie Barton.
And I'm at Elamine88. Please throw in the hashtag. The hashtag is Party Lines. Let us know what you think.
That is it for Party Lines this week from CBC News and CBC Podcasts. I'm Rosemary Barton, Chief Political Correspondent for CBC News.
And I'm Elamine Abdul Mahmoud, Chief Sworn Enemy of All Pandemic Misinformation on WhatsApp and Culture Writer for BuzzFeed News.
See you back here next week.
You bet.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.